Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode. Francesca Stein is a senior fertility nurse specialist with over 18 years experience in the fertility sector. She is the current chair of the Royal College of Nurses Fertility Nursing Forum and most recently set up her own practice at Tailored Fertility to offer independent support and fertility advice. Francesca, welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Thank you. So if we could just start out with you giving a broad outline of what you do.
So I am a fertility nurse and I've been a fertility nurse for about 18 years. I started off in the NHS and then I've worked in quite a few private fertility clinics. And I've been doing a lot of things really, all the way from, you know, looking after patients with donor conception, surrogacy, and then leading teams and building out new services and new products related to fertilities.
So thanks for coming on, Francesca. It's been great to see you and obviously have you on. Sean's talk really highly of you, so I've been really looking forward to getting you on. Fertility nurses obviously have a lot to do with both the female and the male patient. What is the vital work that they do in the clinics, and what can guys kind of expect with maybe with their first interaction with a fertility nurse?
It's a good question. I think, you know, when, you know, what we tend to do is we're the support for the patients. We're there all the way through. So, you know, all the way through the cycle, sometimes, you know, some of us, like if we are working in an advanced area or we're senior nurses, we're doing the embryo transfer, sometimes the egg collection. So, you know, everything from start to finish, we're guiding patients through, but the clinical aspects of it, but also the emotional support side of things. So, you know, just being there to answer questions and things like that. To be honest, I think that, you know, we do really well as nurses looking after females, but we're not very good at looking after men when they come to the clinic. And I think any fertility nurse will say that to you. You know, we do tend to, and this is probably, you know, not a great word to use, but it's the correct one, neglect the blokes when they come in. The first time a man will come in to see the nurse, it will probably be because we're sitting there taking blood from your partner or something like that, or giving her consent forms or looking at her or talking to things. So it's just the interactions, you know, will always probably start with the female, unless, you know, you've got a same-sex male couple coming for treatment, but then that's slightly different. But it does tend to be we very much focus on the woman, which isn't correct, you know, and which is why we did this work, which we're going to talk about at the Royal College of Nursing. But yeah, it's pretty much, it's all, you know, we test the female first before we even look at the man. So you probably find that when you come into a clinic as a bloke, you know, unless you're a single person or, as I said, a same-sex male couple, you'll come in with your partner and, you know, it will be the first time you'll come is that we're taking bloods or doing consent forms with you and you might not have even known anything about what's going on up until then.
Yeah, that's a very honest, you know, honest opinion and honest statement there. I remember really distinctly being kind of embarrassed about meeting a nurse for the first time and kind of having the anxiety around, you know, from handing me the pot to go and do what I need to do to standing there or sitting there having blood tests. And something we've learned from our previous podcasts is, talking to so many other professionals, is that it's like a big cog that's working as a team. What position does a fertility nurse play in that, and how should guys be nervous about, you know, that interaction, that first interaction? Because I think it's important that they hear that come from a nurse, because it is a very anxious time.
Yeah, I think so. It is a big, like as you say, like a big, you know, it's an MDT, so the multidisciplinary team. But you know, I think, you know, I will say this because I'm a nurse and I love being a nurse, but I think nurses are at the heart of it. You know, we keep everything together. You know, don't get me wrong, you know, the lab teams, the counsellors, the doctors, everyone in the clinic does an amazing job at, you know, at supporting patients. But I do think that we sometimes have to be the gel that holds it all together. And I would say that, you know, it is embarrassing. It is an anxious time, but you don't need to be. You know, we're medical professionals. We go into nursing school and university and we treat everyone. You know, it doesn't matter if they're male or female. We're taught to treat everyone and we do treat everyone. So I can honestly say when a bloke comes in clinic and sees me, I don't, you know, feel embarrassed and I don't think, oh, I've got to do something different here. He's a man. You know, it's just that you're my patient. I'm caring for you exactly the same way as I would every other patient that walks through the door. And I'll give you all of the care and support that you need because you are my patient, just like anyone else that's sitting in that waiting room.
Yeah, so it's safe to say that whatever they say to you, you've probably heard it 100 times before and experienced it 100 times before.
Yeah, nothing shocks us.
Yeah. And I think that comes with experience, doesn't it? So it's these guys that, you know, guys that are listening to this, you're going to see these nurses. They've got a lot of experience and they're there to help you. They're an important part of that team that we've been talking about through the other podcasts.
Yeah, I'd echo that as well. And that was my impression from the outset, actually, was that the professionalism. But to touch upon what you mentioned earlier, Fran, was the caring nature. That was so apparent from the outset. There may be a little bit of knowledge lacking towards men, especially when it comes to fertility, but actually, if you just approach it with that care, that empathy, like that goes a long way anyway. And I think, you know, you don't really go into that profession if you don't have that anyway. So that came across for me straight away.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is that, you know, to be completely honest, before I was a fertility nurse, I worked in HIV and sexual health. I used to work on the male sexual health floor. So we would see constant reoffenders coming in, you know, for sexual health. And, you know, they're patients at the end of the day. So you still, you know, so if you think you're going to go into a fertility clinic and, you know, you're going to embarrass the nurse by what you're telling her or, you know, you don't want to share your history or anything like that, we've seen it all. Don't be, you know, we're there to look after you. So I think that's the key thing is just, you know, there's nothing to be worried about. Actually, you probably, and, you know, I think the other thing is that, we're women and people might want to tell us things because we're women, mostly anyway, most fertility nurses are women, but you know, we're not there to judge you. We're just there to look after you.
This podcast is sponsored by One Day Tests. Whether you are thinking of starting a family or are already trying to conceive, getting a blood test from One Day Tests can be a really powerful tool to help you shed light on any issues that might be affecting the quality of your sperm and the chances of your partner conceiving. These could be medical conditions, hormone imbalances, and nutritional deficiencies. Ultimately, most of us just want to know two things. One, is there something that could be affecting the chances of my partner becoming pregnant? And two, if so, what can I do about it? Whether that's specific treatment or just making simple lifestyle changes. One-day tests can take the guesswork out. They offer a large range of fertility-related blood tests for both men and women at really affordable prices. It's super flexible. You can customize your tests and have it done at one of their 9 clinic locations or in the comfort of your own home using their home kit tests. Results are returned quickly with an easy-to-understand description, which can be accessed online and downloaded to share with your health practitioner. Find out more by visiting onedaytest.com. And as a listener of this podcast, you get a 10% discount by entering the code MFP10 at checkout. That's MFP10 at checkout. One Day Tests, giving you the power to manage your health.
I think it's important to note as well that guys that are listening to this, be as honest as you can, because then that's the way you get the best treatment. You know, missing something out that you know would be important could potentially result in failed cycles and things like that. So although, yes, you can feel embarrassed and you can feel anxious, I found that once I've gone a few times, that's settled. You just got to trust the process, trust the team. And in the end, like towards the end of our third cycle, especially like for Enya, so for our second child, I feel a lot more comfortable in that environment because I've been through the process. But
I had the trust in the lovely team and the amazing team that were there because I understood that they were there to help. So, make sure you say everything and be as honest as you can.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And, you know, we're not going to judge you.
No, I agree. And, I reached that kind of level of comfort as well. And I think that comes with experience the further into your treatment you go as well. And that, because you do build up that barrier beforehand, especially if you've been fortunate enough to not really need medical assistance or care before, and then suddenly you go in and it's getting over those initial phases of embarrassment. But I think, Fran, you mentioned, I think the term you used was glue, that the nurses are kind of the glue that hold it all together, and I couldn't agree more. It felt like they were, because they were like the constant, that you were always having interaction with them, the phone calls when you go in, it's that they were there initially, and then you would go off and see like maybe the urologists or embryologists, but you would always then come back to the nurses. So in that respect, and then what you mentioned about perhaps a lack of knowledge around male fertility, the Royal College of Nursing have recently put out a report actually about specifically about male fertility. So could you tell us a little bit about what that report covers and what that could mean for men needing fertility treatment in the future?
Yeah. So we produce a number of guidelines and policies each year, and it's mainly for education, but we do, you know, the end goal is to better patient care. So it's educating nurses, and not just fertility nurses. This project was for all nurses, because you see a lot of nurses coming onto urology, patients coming onto urology wards and things like that, or GPs, so the practice nurses, and they have no idea about male fertility and not know the questions they need to ask. So this came about because we did a little bit of research and looked at, you know, what fertility nurses need. Now, I've been very lucky in my career. I worked with a fabulous doctor called Luca Sabatini at Barts, and he taught me how to do surgical sperm retrieval. He ran the male fertility service, and he taught me how to do things and let me lead his male fertility clinic, which I absolutely loved. But you don't always get that exposure, and that's quite rare. And so when we did some research before we started the project, we were talking to nurses about their experience, their expertise and their skills in male factor fertility. And a lot of it was non-existent. There's probably from the people that we talked to, there's a handful of us that knew what we were talking about, not to the level of a consultant urologist, of course, but, you know, knew what we were doing in terms of looking after the blokes that came into clinic, a diagnosis for male factor fertility. So we decided that, you know, it was time that, you know, the Royal College put out a publication, so it's more like guidance now. So for all nurses, fertility nurses, and other nurses who have got an interest, and it's basically education and training on what it is, how to support, and you know what you need to know in clinic, and how, you know, it all going down to also like there's competencies in there to make sure that you are competent to be, you know, supporting men through this. So it was a big project, and we had lots of people involved. So the British Fertility Society, FNUK, supported us with it. So in Beaker, so we made sure that we got lots of different experts in the field really involved, so that we could make sure that we were, you know, going about it the right way, had all the right information, all the right expert guidance in there. So it basically started because nurses didn't know what to do. And we were being accused of neglecting the men because we weren't sure, you know, what to do when it came to men coming to clinic. I think one of the big things, and I'm probably just waffling now, but this is something that, you know, it plays on my mind a lot, is in COVID, when they stopped men coming for pregnancy scans or stopped men coming to the clinic with their partners. I mean, what on earth was that all about? You know, I know that we had to follow government guidelines, but you've just basically we've gone back 10 years again. You've done all that damage to all these blokes that, you know, were coming into the clinics, were, you know, feeling a little bit all right about it. And then we just devastated it all again. So, I think, you know, it was so needed. And the result of that coming out now, everyone, you know, is really keen. You know, Anne, my colleague at the RCN, she presented about it at BF at Fertility this year in Edinburgh. And, you know, it's had so much support. We've had, you know, Kevin McElhaney, who's the chair of the BFS and a urologist, he's supported the document. It's just a good piece of work, and it's actually helped so many nurses to overcome this fear of treating men, really.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I could imagine it for a nurse that isn't used to it, to have a man in front of you that, even though he might not realise it, he's presenting himself as vulnerable, because we do have certain behaviour traits that we'll do. We'll go quiet, we won't talk much, we just kind of nod. It's completely different in the level of interaction or type of interaction you need to do from a man to a woman. Where my personal opinion is, often when women are upset, they want to talk about it, they want to get it out, where as a man, I just shut down, like, boom, mm-hmm. like you ain't getting nothing. You know, you just tell me that my, my semen analysis is really poor, my sperm analysis is really poor. I'm shutting down for at least a few minutes to figure out what's going on. And it's those moments that I think can be extremely difficult. But it was interesting what you said there about, in terms of during COVID, and that guys weren't allowed in. Now, I had the experience of fertility treatment before and during COVID, and it was a completely different experience for me. I said that I was obviously more comfortable in the environment with the nurses, but it was clear that they had to follow guidelines, which in a way did disrupt the relationship we could build. And at points, I remember being really angry, the fact that I wasn't allowed in and things like that. And then when Enya was born, there was question marks of whether I'd even be allowed in then. And it's real tough. And I feel for these nurses that have to deal with this front line. They have no say on the discussion. They just have to implement what they're told to. And I think even during a really tough time, I must, take my hat off to so many of them. They carried on providing such a wonderful service. And obviously this piece of work that's come out is going to help them even more. It's important for them, but it's important for the guys that are coming as well to know that this work is going ahead. It is out there. And the Royal College of Nursing is really taking it seriously. They've identified it. And they want to improve it.
Yeah, you can't really find a fault with that. You know, the fact that they've realised an area where there's room for improvement and have addressed it with a fantastic report and the work that's gone into it. And like you said, Fran, the people that are backing it. And then also to have the patient voice in there with Toby, it just brings it to life that bit more. So that's brilliant. The fact that you're doing that to make the future for men in fertility, and as we've discussed on this podcast many a time, the future is not looking good, and there will be more people, more men coming through those doors. So hopefully that things will change. And actually, I'll echo what you said, Kieran, having gone through it during COVID, not being allowed in for those scans. It wasn't easy. I took a pragmatic approach about it to think, well, it's more important as the fact that we're here getting those scans, and the egg retrieval actually was, and the embryo transfer was all during COVID, and I wasn't allowed in. But I was like, I'd rather be here now doing this rather than, and not, me not being allowed in than it, us not being at this point, if you know what I mean. So overall, I was okay with it. But it was also acknowledging that it wasn't anyone at the clinic's fault for that. It was government guidance. But
yeah, Boris. We can all blame Boris.
Yeah.
I think whoever had been in the, in the conductor's chair at that time, would have had to make the same decision, because in theory, they weren't making it, were they? Because there's powers that be that we don't see. But in interest, was the report initiated through the Royal College of Nursing identifying it, or was it nurses themselves saying we need support with this and a bit more guidance? So did it come from the college itself, or was it actual nurses saying, help, we need some help here?
No, it was us. So we there's so many forums at the Royal College for each different area or speciality or discipline of nursing, and we're quite a small one actually, fertility nursing, one of the smallest. There's six of us on the committee, I think that's right, Yeah. And we got together. So we are, all of us are fertility nurses in different areas. And we just looked that this is a need. You know, we were getting questions, because we do, we get lots of people contact us and say, can you help with this? Can you help with that? And then, so we put it forward. So you have to put a bid in to the college to, you know, get funding to do projects like this. So I submitted a bid to it's called FGG, so Forum Governance Group. Say, look, this is why the work's needed. You know, we want to do it. We want to put the RCN seal of approval on it and get it out there. And they agreed. So then we started the project. So it has to come from the specialty, really. So it came from us first to say, look, this is what we need to do. Approve it for us so we can get to work. So that's how it came about, really.
There's no better proof than that, you know, these nurses that are helping us guys in clinic really want to give us the best help possible. You know, they themselves are putting their hands up and going, you know, give us some guidelines on this, give us some support, give us some extra training, whatever, you know, whatever that looks like. It's really reassuring to hear, you know, and because for so long men have been neglected in every level of fertility treatment. All the people that we've talked to, all the professionals so far, they've all said the same thing. More needs to be done. And everyone's banging the right drum now. It's just, we need to wait for that momentum to start picking up. Yeah. And guys will really start feeling supported all the time in clinics. Whether it's with a nurse or, you know, a urologist or any other aspect of fertility treatment. What barriers or stigmas have you come across in terms of men wanting to actually engage in emotional support from a nurse? It's something that I think discussing might help someone out there go, I don't actually need to worry about that. They're there to support us and kind of push that emotional support forward, because it is such a challenging time. So yeah, what barriers and stigmas have you come across?
I think that the main thing is that, well, from what I've seen in my career, is that the men feel that they're not manly enough if they try and get the support from you. And I mean, I think there's two different things here, isn't there? So we've got our counsellors, and that those are, you know, professional people and coaches that are providing this emotional support. But we are just handholding, really. So we're not going to go into, you know, analyze you psychologically or anything like that. We're not, you know, looking at your mental health. We're just we're handholding, and we're acting as a support to you through your treatment. You know, as I said before, there's no judgment, but it does seem to be that blokes don't want to ask us. They don't want to be seen as you know, lesser of a man, I guess, if they are reaching out to us to try and support them. Which, you know, it's not the case at all. Like, and I said it before, I wouldn't treat anyone any different. If someone needs my help and needs my advice and support and needs my nursing care, I'm going to give it. You know, and actually, I might be a bit forceful with it if I see that you're trying to not take it from me, in terms of, like, you know, because you don't want to see it as that, you know, you are a bloke and you don't need support from a nurse, because you do. Everyone does. And actually, we're not the people that are going to analyze you. We're just going to support you. So don't be scared of it, and don't think that I'm going to think any less of you because you're asking for my help or showing signs that you want some help, because it's normal, it's natural, everybody needs it. You can't go through something like this, you know, fertility treatment, without any support, because it will just consume you.
Yeah, we can both attest to that.
I was going to say, you know, I can tell you firsthand, it will consume you and take you to some dark places when you're not expecting it. It's, it can be I found the first step was the hardest one. The first step of accepting or requesting help. And that first step came from a discussion with Jen, you know, my wife. And then from there, I was able to kind of piece it all together. And the nurses were a crucial part of that, because I distinctly remember just suddenly feeling more comfortable with them because I had opened up. We had a miscarriage at one point as well, and it was the nurses that everything was going on, and there was a lot of care going around Jen, because we found out during a scan that, you know, the fetus was there, but nothing was happening. And it was one of the nurses that turned to me, and she was like, "Are you all right?" And she could clearly see I wasn't. Right. And then I remember Jen coped with it really well, but it really hit me, hard there. And once again, it was the nurses there, like you said, holding my hand. Like they for those 20 minutes, they were my angels. Like I couldn't ask for any more. They just kind of sat with us and gave us the time we needed. But I think if I hadn't have been open to accept that, I would have shut it up, and then it would have come out in another way, some other time. So yeah, guys, that might be, that first step might be the hardest one, but you'd be really thankful. And, you know, these nurses are just normal people that have experienced lives themselves and just want to help.
Some of us are normal.
Yeah. But I think that's, you know, all phases of life, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fran, I'm interested to know, actually, and after almost two decades of doing this, have you seen a sea change in the amount of men that are willing to accept that support or hopefully even coming forward to get it?
Yeah, actually, that I have. And what I'll say is you know, I tend to see it now, is that there's a lot more men that, you know, before they were just quiet, they'd sit in the chair next to their partners, not say a word. But now, you know, I've come across that it's the men doing more talking than the female in some cases now. And it's all like they've got their self in the chair, and they're right, they're taking, I think, some, you know, aspect of taking control of the situation. And if you doing that, it sort of, it helps, doesn't it? Because if you know, take control of it step by step and seeing as you're managing something, it sometimes help with the coping of it all. But definitely there's more men are talking about it, and it's right, you know, why shouldn't they? You know, it affects them. Sometimes it affects them more. And so, you know, it is right. And I think, but I also see from the flip side, clinic staff are getting better at supporting men and encouraging them to take the support and talk and be part of it. You know, there's no more like Mrs. Smith only in the waiting room, and, you know, it's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith come through, you know, whereas before you'd only just call the female. So there does seem to be a bit more inclusive there as well.
Yeah, that's good. It's, you know, it's positive, and actually it's a reflection of the fact that you're both there to get treatment. No matter what's taking you to need that, you're in it together, you're in it as a couple. Obviously this is like kind of solo mum by choice, for example, exception otherwise, but there aren't many, I can't think of anything else where you are going to need medical treatment as a couple.
Mm.
So it's important for men to acknowledge that, which it sounds like they are, which is great hearing it, you know, from the practitioners that are there experiencing it. So positive steps, and we like to think that we're playing our hand in that in some way, because we've talked about, we were both kind of that one that was sat on the side, just referred to as the partner, or what was it you had, Kieran? It was Mrs. Hannington and partner.
Partner, yeah. But it was the "and partner" while we were there. Used to letters still come up. I've still got letters like now. It says Mrs. Hannington and partner. And it's like, but I distinctly remember just feeling horrendous when I read that. It was the "and partner" that might, you know, she's having to inject herself every night. But the good thing is that it seems to be the fertility world seems to be learning, and that's the key thing. And we can only, like you said, mate, keep pounding away, just keep going, so we can help the guys that are going to experience this in the future, because it's not going away. It's getting worse. You know, we have to have that honest kind of statement. You know, fertility in men and women is getting worse, and it's only going to increase. So we need to kind of increase that awareness, and it's and nurses play such an important role in that.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully now that there's a lot more work being done, and it's being talked about a lot more, that, you know, men will feel that they can, you know, talk about it a bit more openly. But then also, you know, the nurses, you know, I do see a shift. They are, you know, they are taking more of a lead, and they're more interested in it. They want to know about male fertility. Like, you know, where I used to work, all of our nurses, we trained them to, you know, interpret semen analysis and be able to treat men, you know, so there's no reason why you can't, you know. If you understand how it all works, there might be some cases where you're like not actually sure, what does this mean? I need to speak to a urologist or an andrologist to get like second opinion, or I need support with this. Yeah, and that's absolutely fine. But, you know, just being able to support men by, you know, a little bit, or interpreting their blood results, interpreting their semen analysis, you know, it's going to help them. They don't have to sit maybe for 6 weeks waiting for that to be report to be reviewed by the GP who has no bloody idea. Or then an extra lengthy waiting list, waiting for a urologist or an andrologist, because the nurse can interpret a basic SA and you know, give you all of it, and actually probably do it in a more compassionate way than the GP would.
Yeah, I think you're a good example of that, Sean, aren't you? Mm-hmm. If you had had maybe a fertility nurse ring you and talk to you about what was going on, it wouldn't have changed it, but it may have softened the blow in terms of actually what is this?
Like, well, yeah,
I've got to go and Google it myself to find out.
Exactly. Asking the person who I'm guessing was probably a receptionist, telling me that I've got azoospermia, what is that? And then not knowing. But yeah, having someone who's had that training to deliver that and deliver that news compassionately as well,
yeah,
is crucial.
And I think from a guy point of view, and I'm sure you would have thought this very quickly, Sean, you would have gone, well, what's next then? Mm-hmm. Like, I've got this thing called azoospermia. So what's next? What do I need to do next? And having that maybe bit of a clearer pathway, that people who are delivering this news are a bit more spot on with what they're talking about, would allow that discussion to have, because then a nurse would be able to say to you, well, what you need to do, what's going to happen is you're going to come back in, give another sample, and then from that we will analyze. And it's just that, one, you're going to feel like it's all a little bit more controlled, and two, you feel like you're getting, how can I put it, like you're being treated as a human rather than just a number. And that's something that I think nurses do amazingly. Like, they are so busy, but I've never had a bad experience, especially in the fertility world, where they haven't got time for me. They hadn't, you know, if I needed something, as long as I was open to it, they would have that discussion. So guys out there, just be open to it, and it will be a lot better experience for you. But yeah, that pathway needs looking at, definitely. Who's delivering that news? But the way it's set up in the UK is it all goes through your doctor, doesn't it?
Mm.
And that poor receptionist didn't know what azoospermia was.
No, nor why. She was asking me to come back in 3 months. She just said, that's what I've been asked to ask you. But again, if it's someone who has that background knowledge to say, well, the sperm cycle is 74 to 90 days, and that's when we need to just reaffirm why, whether the first one was an anomaly or not. And there's things that you may want to do and introduce into your lifestyle in that meantime. None of that. Just out there. You got this. Come back in 3 months. Thanks very much.
Fran, is that a bit more, say, for example, if you go NHS route or private route, is it possible that you would get a nurse ringing you down the private route rather than the NHS route?
Yeah, it's possible. It depends. You might even get someone from the lab ringing you, an embryologist, which is probably more likely. You know, even the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, if it was quite a serious result, then yes, it would be a medical professional that was ringing you with the results and letting you know what the next steps were. Without a doubt, it certainly wouldn't be someone from the admin team.
No.
I do. The NHS, I mean, there's a really good clinic in Birmingham. It's not a fertility clinic, it's a lab. So they do all the NHS semen analysis, then go into the fertility clinic. But there's a scientist who works there, Stuart, and he runs that unit, and he rings the patients himself. I mean, he's quite senior, but he makes sure that they know what the results are. And I mean, it's a bit of a rarity, because not every NHS unit has a lab like that. But he does. He's so good. He does make sure the patients know exactly the next steps and what the results are, because he's one of the ones that says, you can't give this to a GP. They have no idea. I mean, GPs are great, but you know, they're not expected to know everything.
They play an important part of the referral process. You know, they're quite often they are the first path of referral, aren't they? But they're general practitioners at the end of the day. Like, they cover everything. And with something like fertility, that's so personal. I can't think of anything as a man that is more personal than, you know, what does your sperm do? So it'd be nice to see a bit more care taken about how those results are delivered, especially in the NHS. You know, I've been on both sides of the coin and I know which one I preferred. You know, yeah. I had a much better level of care privately, but I understand the stresses that the NHS are under, and I will reiterate that the nurses do the best job they can in this situation.
Yeah, it's also about efficiencies though, isn't it? I mean, you could, you know, they're always looking at ways to save money in the NHS. You know, if you just train someone to do this, then I know this might not have been the case, but in Sean's situation, if someone then rang back again because they wasn't sure and rang back again, that was taking up the receptionist hours maybe to like deal with that. If you've got someone who's trained initially to deal with that straight away, you've saved that sort of. So it is about cost saving as well, but also being more efficient and also actually being qualified to give medical advice, because that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, literally life-changing medical advice. But, because of our situations, our circumstances, our journeys, we often do focus on the heterosexual pathway of fertility treatment. But obviously, we are acutely aware that it's not just heterosexual couples that seek fertility treatment. So in terms of homosexual men, for example, Fran, what does the fertility landscape look like for them?
So it's tricky. I mean, fertility is tricky for anyone, but there's absolutely no NHS funding or, you know, access to care for same-sex men. They have to pay out a lot of money, and it's surrogacy ultimately. I mean, they could co-parent. Some same-sex men do decide to like co-parent with a female friend and have treatment that way. But predominantly, if it's a same-sex male couple, they'll do surrogacy. It's hard, it's difficult, you know, the financial constraints of that are huge. You're probably looking at around £30,000, probably more, for a cycle in the UK. If you go to overseas, then you're, you know, in essence of $150,000, $200,000 US in the States. It is tricky. It's, you know, you've got to lay out a lot, and it's not quick. You know, you've got to find an egg donor, you've got to find a surrogate, and then you've also got to go through the whole fertility investigations in the first place, because, you know, it does happen. You've got gay guys out there that are azoospermic and they don't know, and they've had some sort of trauma or health related problems in the past that's caused a problem. They've got low sperm count, so they've got that to deal with, as well as the fact that they've got to find an egg donor and find a surrogate and pay all of this money. And in the UK, they still won't be the legal parents of their child until the surrogate says so and a parental order can be passed, which is usually about 6 months after the baby's born. So they've got this limbo period where they're not actually, if she's single, the surrogate, I mean, the legal aspect of it is a minefield, but if she's single, she can nominate one of them. So one of them might be the parent from birth, but if she's got a husband, her and her husband will be the legal parents of that child or children in the UK. So they've got all that to contend with. So the fact that, you know, they've got to go through this whole rigmarole of financial aspect, finding a clinic, finding somewhere that offers surrogacy, finding a surrogate, finding your egg donor, and then one of them might not have, you know, good enough sperm to use for treatment in the first place. It does take a toll on them. I mean, it's not harder than what it is for anyone else, because fertility is trauma. Fertility treatment is trauma for everyone. But, you know, the access to care, so straight away being told, you know, being, I guess, you know, I'm trying to think of the word, but straight away you're pretty much on the back foot because you're a gay guy and you want to be a dad because you can't go to the NHS. You can't even get a semen analysis on the NHS if you're a gay guy. It's all got to be done privately.
There's a lot of things that kind of are quite shocking there. Like the fact of you can't even get a semen analysis. Like surely you've got a right to just see how your fertility health is. Especially if you're looking to start a family, however that is, however, whatever pathway you choose, or, you know, you still got that in my head, you still got that right to see actually, does it work? I'm like, you know, is it going to do the job that I need it to? Is it the same for same sex female couples that they can't get funding?
They can now. So it's discriminating. So we're discriminating against certain groups. Not we as in us, but the government for sure. But it wasn't. So, you know, that it's just started now. Some integrated healthcare boards are funding for same sex female couples to have treatment. But then there is some, you know, quite some sticking points around that. So they've got to sometimes have 6 rounds of IUI, so intrauterine insemination first, which are not very successful. It's a lot to go through. That's 6 months of treatment before they can go on to IVF. So they've got to have 6 rounds of unsuccessful treatment before they can move on to IVF. So that's trauma after trauma after trauma again. They've got to find a sperm donor. You know, there's a lot. I mean, they can get funding. The access to care is a little bit easier, but it's still, you know, we're still discriminating against them.
It's still infertility, even if you have two fertile partners. It's social infertility because of, you know, the way things work. You need a man and a female, a male and a female. But so, you know, people are opting. You're entering that relationship, and you know that if you want to become parents, you are going to need fertility treatment of some description. So, but then they, like you said, Fran, it's being discriminated against from the outset of not having that access to the care. And I certainly remember my wife and I were talking about it when we were going for fertility treatment, because we were in those waiting rooms and we looked around and we said, like, the posters on the walls, the language, we were like, there is nothing about homosexual couples here. It's all men and women. But we knew that wasn't the case, having had friends, like homosexual friends. We were like, this is crazy. This was back then, 2018, 2019. So it's not exactly decades ago. Do you know if that is any kind of change?
I'd like to say yes, but it doesn't. I think some clinics are doing much better at it. Like, you know, I am going to name drop here, but Carol Gilling Smith, who owns the Agora in Brighton, she's so good at this sort of stuff. You know, if you just listen to Carol and the work that she's done in the sector, she's fantastic. But it's not, you know, I've been in clinic where you've had gay guys come and ask me for, you know, can I remove all the heteros porn out of the bloody men's room, because I mean, that's, they can't use that, you know. And it's like, what do you do? You know, it's built really for heterosexual couples, and especially the, like, you know, it's just not, you know, the best environment for them. And even like with trans community now and non-binary people, you've got male and female, we're sending people to the men's room. It's not the men's room, is it? So you've really got to be careful. But I think clinics are trying. They are doing better. They're doing much better than they was. But there's still more that we can do. But it's more we can do for everyone. You know, this, even having, you know, a young, you know, late 20s couple on the poster, a heterosexual couple, you know, that's not really, you know, representative of anyone that going into a fertility clinic. So, you know, people that you've got off of Google Images is not what you need. You know, you need real people, and to show who is coming to the clinic, make people feel comfortable. But I think there's more work to be done. Some clinics are doing it really well, but it is the NHS clinics that are not doing so well. But it's down to funding again, you know, and, you know, having the right people in place to be able to make it work and make it a better environment for everyone.
Yeah, it's definitely a case of the appropriate treatment for the for that individual. Because at the end of the day, you're an individual. There are 7 billion of us in the world, and we're all different. But
I guess that's what you get from that private healthcare, don't you? It is generally catered for what you need. It shocks me about same-sex female couples have to have six rounds of IUI. Like, what a waste of efficiency and funds. Like, the research is not great on it anyway. So why don't we just use this straight away? In the heterosexual world, ICSI is being used more and more and more around the world. Yet we're like back in the Stone Age with other things. But it's good to hear that people are out there doing the work, because that was going to be my next question. Like, are you aware of any work that's going on in clinics? But, you know, you speak about the clinic in Brighton. Brighton's a very openly homosexual area. You know, there's a lot of homosexuals that live in Brighton. Gay capital of UK, they call it. You know, it shouldn't have to happen just there. It should be happening all over the country, not just in hotspots where there's more people that need their service. You know, we talk about so much about the equalities of what we all need, but then in such an important thing, we're letting so many people down. But that's why we talk about it. That's why we're having this discussion, because people need to realize that there's more work to do to make this equal to everyone, you know. But we'll just keep going. We will keep going and talking for every guy out there, whatever their situation. We want them to feel supported, want them to feel heard, want them to feel like they are equal and worth people's time like that. Because I think quite often you go, well, I'm not going to bother because I won't be listened to. Well, we're listening, you know, and we want to kind of push that forward.
Yeah. And that's it, you know, I think my message would be to any guy listening to this that, you know, speak up, use your voice and just ask the questions that you need answers to. I can certainly say that as a nurse, you know, we will listen and we will do whatever we can to support you and get you what you need. You know, we know that not all treatments are successful. Most of it's not. So we can't guarantee that you will become a dad or a parent, but we will do our very best to make sure you feel supported along the way.
Yeah. I think it's been a really interesting insight into the valuable role that a nurse does. So thanks so much for kind of sharing everything with us, Fran. And I'm sure that there'll be guys listening to this that really take a lot from it. And like I said right at the beginning, the nurses are such an important cog in that big mechanism of the fertility world.
They're the most important.
Yeah. You take them out and, well, you would if you took them out. Like, let's be honest. We all know who's conducting the show. Like,
100%.
That's it.
He's the nurse.
You've got to have the one person who is talking to everyone. And that's the nurse, isn't it? So thanks for coming on and having that chat. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I
echo that.
I suppose we had better ask the question that we ask at the end of every podcast, and that would be what one piece of advice would you give to a man that is facing fertility difficulties? As a nurse, what advice would you give him?
Well, I wouldn't give one piece. But I suppose, you know, this is me, so I've got a lot to say all the time. But, you know, firstly, ask for whatever you need. Don't feel like you can't. You know, you're in a safe space. If you're in that clinic and the nurse is there, she's given her time to you. She's there to listen to you. Don't feel like she isn't. So ask for what you need and just use all the resources that we're giving to you. You know, it's for you. We're there to support you, and don't feel like you shouldn't be there or you're just a number, because you're absolutely not. We care about you and we want to make sure you feel supported.
That's great advice. Thank you very much. And I think it's weird echo that. Just talk to the nurses. They're there to help, I promise.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, like Kieran said, that's why we wanted you on, because you said it perfectly. You are the glue. And thank you. Thanks for holding it together for us during this podcast episode as well.
You're welcome.
Thank you. But Fran, if people want to get in contact with you, how can they do so?
So I do some work with some clinics, and I do have my own page where I offer support and advice to patients and guide them through fertility treatments and journeys. So if you do want to get in touch with me, you can drop me an email. And it's just Francesca@tailoredfertility.org. So you can get in touch with me.
Amazing. Thank you.
See you later.
Thanks for coming on, Fran.
Thanks, you. Fran. Take care.
Bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.